government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 26th on the West Coast, now February the 27th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com. Lots to talk about tonight, and this being Friday night, of course, our guest is a scientist and inventor, and we're going to bring him on in just a moment, but I thought I'd open up with a news item that is, let's say, very important today. It's something that's current, something that is also going to be transpiring over the next several months or so. And we're going to discuss the significance of this particular topic in light of everything else that's going on in the world and in the solar system and in the galaxy and even the universe. This comes from All About Science and their website, allaboutscience.org. And I'm going to read something about the Large Hadron Collider experiment. The purpose of the experiment. The Large Hadron Collider, or the LHC, just outside Geneva, Switzerland, is one of the most profound scientific projects ever conceived. It is located between France and Switzerland and operated by the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN. Some call that CERN. Scientists from around the world hope it will be fully operational in September 2009. The ultimate goal of the LHC is to answer huge scientific questions about the subatomic world, the massive cosmos, and their finely tuned relationship. Initially, it's an attempt to observe theoretical particles that scientists hypothesize should be there. Ultimately, it's an attempt to understand the creation of the cosmos and the powerful complexity and design that permeates the particle realm. Large Hadron Collider Experiment. What is large? The Large Hadron Collider is the largest machine in the world. The two accelerator rings are 5 miles in diameter and nearly 17 miles in circumference. It is the world's largest refrigeration system with 9,600 magnets cooled to minus 271 degrees centigrade. It has 4 large detectors weighing from 11 to 25 million pounds each and 2 smaller detectors. What is a hadron? Hadrons are subatomic particles interacting with the strong nuclear force. What is the strong nuclear force? It is the strongest force in the universe, yet only operates within the nucleus of an atom. It is the force mediated by fundamental particles called gluons, which hold together 3 fundamental particles called quarks, which make up a proton or a neutron. The strong nuclear force dimensions in strength as quarks get closer and increases in strength as they get further apart. There is no known natural phenomenon strong enough to separate the 3 quarks. The second order effect for the strong nuclear force is to hold protons and neutrons together in the nucleus of an atom. The strong interaction is liberated during a nuclear reaction, such as what takes place in the sun, a nuclear bomb, or a nuclear reactor. What is a collider? A collider is an underground, nearly circular vacuum tube accelerator in which charged particles move in opposite directions close to the speed of light. The particles are accelerated and kept at a constant energy by quadruple magnets electromagnetic resonators. The particle beams are focused by quadruple magnets and maintained in their orbit by dipole magnets. When the computers and detectors are ready, proton or lead ion beams colliding from opposite directions doubles the energy released to an equivalent of 100,000 times the heat at the center of the sun. The detectors capture the moment of particle collision, and the computers analyze the data for months and years to come. What is the intent? The ultimate intent of the LHC is to help scientists understand the nature of matter at the moment the cosmos was created. Why did matter remain when matter and antimatter annihilated each other in an energy transformation during the creation of the cosmos? What happened to the antimatter? What makes up the 96% of the cosmos we now call dark matter and dark energy? Does the Higgs field, aka God's bosom force center, or a carrier, and dark energy, does the Higgs field, aka God's bosom force carrier that mysteriously gives mass to particles really exist? What about hidden extra dimensions of space that quantum models show exist? In a nutshell, the Hadron Collider experiment is a huge scientific effort to sneak a glimpse into the mind of God at the moment of creation. Stay tuned. Now, I've got some definite thoughts on this whole idea, and I'm certain that tonight's guest does. I apologize for the reading errors here. The fonts are not consistent and a bit staggered, so moving from line to line is a bit uncomfortable. Anyway, with that, I want to bring on tonight's guest, who is a regular, and he's our resident science advisor on Evident Footprints, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you. Good to be here.
Boy, you got to hear this. They're saying that a machine can take us into the mind of God. I could have saved them billions of dollars and taught someone how to meditate. It's amazing. And we're talking about 100 times the heat at the center of the sun. Do they have any idea what that would be like?
Well, are you asking me, or are you just making a statement?
Well, I'm sort of asking, and rhetorically, I guess, and making a statement, yes.
Well, I imagine that they can calculate what they think it would be, you know. Numbers will give you any answer you want once you arrange them properly. But the real issue here is, you know, how much truth is actually involved in all this rigmarole that they're doing. You know, I started my career in that field. And the reason I didn't stick with it, quite frankly, was because I realized that I was more in love with the physics of designing such machinery than I was in its actual use. And I understand, you know, that there are supposed to be some basic laws in quantum physics that suggest that particles will be created and will condense from energy into, you know, certain basic elementary particles that have consistent masses or predictable masses and all that kind of stuff. But the more I studied it, the more I felt like it was similar to designing a big catapult or something, you know, to hurl dishes against a steel wall and then spend hours and hours examining the fragments to try and determine who had made the dish in the first place. It seemed like it was rather pointless.
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. And the cost and the potential danger that's involved. I mean, they've had problems with this thing already. Now, recently, they announced that they're expecting this thing to get fired up, you know, in the very near future. They're starting this. I find it interesting with global warming going on. Wouldn't it save a lot of money and a lot of energy if they did this out in space? You know, I mean, think of what you have to overcome to bring the temperature down to minus 271 degrees centigrade with all this global warming going on.
Well, even without the global warming going on, you're talking about a sizable refrigeration bill, you know, to accomplish that. And I didn't remember exactly how many cooled magnets you mentioned, the super cooled magnets, but there was a bunch of them.
9,600.
Well, there you go. I mean, even at normal refrigeration temperatures, you know, 9,600 refrigeration units could crank up an interesting little electric bill. By the way, the whole thing that they're running over there must have a humongous electric bill. I wonder where they're getting their power from.
Yeah, well, it lies between France and Switzerland. It'd be nice to see who's footing the bill on this thing, too.
Yeah, I definitely thought about that. It's got to be in the billions. I mean, just untold billions of dollars to do this. You know, almost 17 miles in circumference. I mean, I've used on a regular basis some, you know, pretty sophisticated vacuum equipment in experiments that I did years ago, not only with accelerating particles, but also with experimental switching mechanisms for electron beams and, you know, laser work and all kinds of interesting things. And just to get, you know, a 2 or 3 foot chamber evacuated down to, you know, the kind of negative pressures that you need to have a clear mean-free path for standard energy particles that are moving through the tube takes a considerable amount of equipment. Now, just imagine doing that for something that's, you know, 5 miles in diameter and almost 17 miles in circumference. Did they happen to mention the size of the bore of the tube? It would be interesting to see what the volume of that thing is.
No, not in this particular article they haven't. I really couldn't tell you, but it's, from what I understand, it's very large also in that respect. I mean, you're talking about 5 miles in diameter, and 17 mile circumference. I don't think you're talking about something, the gauge of a hula hoop. You know, this has got to be humongous. I'm sure it's like the underground tunnels that they dig, to say the least. Who knows? But I just get this eerie feeling that they're playing with fire, that they do not know what they do for certain. And this is all on hypothesis. This isn't even theory, their favorite word that they like to use. So, what do you think the possibility of something going wrong would be? And if it did, what would be the nature of it?
Well, with any piece of machinery that big, I mean, and that complex, there's an enormous possibility of things going wrong. There's no question about it. But, of course, there's two categories of things going wrong. There's category A, which is not so bad, and that's if, you know, one of the parts or one of the control systems or something like that doesn't function properly, and it screws up their experiments. But then there's category B, where when they collide these two beings together, things that they have absolutely no idea about may come into play and result in some really nasty things happening. You know, that's something that nobody knows, me included.
Yeah, you're talking about something that goes, I would presume that they're anticipating that it's going to surpass the speed of light, In fact, it's been described alternatively in other articles as an attempt to reproduce the Big Bang. I mean, well, what kind of insanity is this? First of all, that's an illusion, in my estimation. That whole concept. You know, what are your thoughts on that for the listeners?
Well, I never believed in the Big Bang theory. I always thought it was a lot of rubbish. I mean, there are certain things that suggest that there was an event of some sort at one point. And, you know, they make judgments about that by measuring, you know, background radiation and residual electromagnetic noise and all this other stuff. But intuitively, and it's a shame that it's got to be intuitive, but, you know, that's all I got. Intuitively, I feel that the Big Bang is a lot of nonsense, and it doesn't answer any questions. The thing I lean towards, to be honest with you, is the idea of continuous creation in a universe that always existed. And by continuous creation, I mean that matter disappears in certain situations, in certain locales, and then energy condenses into new matter under other conditions in other areas, and you know, the net effect is a constant amount of mass and energy in the universe, but it's constantly being reformed. And, you know, I used to think a lot about that kind of stuff, especially when I was younger, you know, when I was pursuing that kind of work as a career or wanting to. And I realized that as a finite being with a reasonably short lifespan, let's call it 85 years, 90 years, we have the tendency to judge everything else in our experience by that knowledge. And that gives us the impression that everything has a beginning and everything has an end. But we don't really know that. I mean, the deity certainly wasn't made by anybody. And I definitely believe there is one. And so if the universe is a physical expression of the deity's function, then why did it have to start? Maybe it was always there. Actually, we're kind of latecomers to the scene, you know. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of stuff that happened before we got here. And trying to piece it all together from our perspective may not be the most intelligent undertaking either, because as materialists, which is what most people are nowadays, we have the tendency to assume that the universe is comprised only of those things that we can see and measure. And that's not a wise assumption to adhere to, because there is always things that we don't know about. And if you don't know about them, they're not necessarily going to show up on your instruments or on your detectors or whatever you want to call them. You know, there was a time when nobody knew about radio waves. There was a time when nobody knew about infrared or ultraviolet rays. And so in the early days of optics, you relied strictly on your senses, which are designed to detect, you know, frequencies in a relatively narrow band. So if we continue to use that form of logic, we're bound to be in error, because our senses weren't made to see all this other stuff. And when we design a machine to look at something that we can't see, we essentially design that machine on the belief that we understand why we're creating it and what it's going to detect. So, in a sense, building these instruments and whatnot is a projection of our own belief system, which is very limited in most people. And so I say there's an enormous amount of room for error in everything that is associated with this stuff, including
theory.
You
know, what comes to mind, Jim, is these incidents of solar flares, and we get these announcements sometimes through the weatherman. Certainly, since the advent of the internet, the word will get around that people should be careful about communications during a certain period of time, that these solar flares and solar storms have a tendency to produce a lot of electromagnetic interference. Now, we're just talking about something being generated from 93 million miles away and having that kind of impact on the subtleties of electronics. And just a solar flare can cause that from 93 million miles away. And they're talking about multiplying the heat of the center of the sun by 100,000 times right on the planet. Are they insane?
Well, they probably are insane, but that's another story. The real way to look at that, which is the way I'm sure they look at it, is that you can have, you know, an instantaneous burst of energy which has that kind of a temperature to it. But it doesn't make very much difference if it doesn't last very long. And you actually see that kind of thing happening in isolated experiments, for instance, where they manage to fuse, protium and deuterium or some other combination of relatively light nuclei into alpha particles or doubly ionized helium nucleus or something of that sort. The differential between the mass you have after the reaction and what you started with is significant enough to release the same energy that you would find in the sun or in a hydrogen bomb, for instance. But it's on such a microscopic scale that even though the numbers are enormous, the actual gradient is small. And so, you know, I believe that that's what they're trying to say when they talk about this stuff. But here's the part that's interesting. Supposing that that kind of reaction produces a much more intense yield of heat than they have the ability to cope with. You know, if you're real lucky, you'll just disintegrate part of your collider tube. If you're not so lucky, you may lose Europe. Who knows?
Yeah, that's the nature of what I'm leading to here. I'm not the expert in that area, but I don't think you have to know how to build an airplane to recognize when they're spraying chemtrails. You know. Or you don't even have to know how to fly one. You just have to have your eyes open and see what's going on. And here
go ahead, Don.
Well, you have this tremendous investment on this huge experiment, and they don't know what they're going to find. They're assuming based on calculations and what they do know that this is safe to do this. Have they made some material that can withstand 100,000 times the heat at the center of the sun? And how did they come about measuring the heat of the center of the sun? How did they do that? What thermometer did they use? Or is that just another series of calculations?
I'm pretty sure it's a series of calculations, but because you couldn't get near enough with anything to measure the surface temperature without the thing vaporizing, never mind the center of the sun. But what this reminds me of, which is worthy of comment, is when they were hypothesizing about the results of the first atomic explosion. There was one physicist, I don't know who he was anymore, to be honest with you, I don't remember, but he was very concerned that if the temperature was high enough, at the core of the nuclear explosion, that some atomic reaction might get started involving the nitrogen in the atmosphere. And if it did, we would simply burn up the entire planet. And, you know, it was another one of those situations where a lot of calculations were done, and, you know, some people agreed with this guy's concerns, and other people said, nah, it'll never happen. But the interesting thing is, the ones who were in control, who was probably your military/political geniuses, they ignored both sides of the argument, and they just said, well, we'll blow it up and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's the same cavalier attitude that they had about setting off an H-bomb on the moon. You know, yeah, sure, try it. You know, what difference does it make? Well, it might make a very big difference, you know. And
yeah,
we were just lucky that the first atomic explosion didn't have any a reaction, you know, in the atmosphere. But
well,
word
has it, Jim, that when there is a nuclear explosion on this planet, that there is a tear in the fabric of space and time. And they've been trying to repair that, and every time they try to do that, they make it worse.
Well, I don't know what to say about that, because quite honestly, I haven't heard about it, but I will say this. You know, that much energy released causes all kinds of nasty things to happen, and I dare to say that we still don't know what all of them are. You know, there are lots of interesting books written about the fact that evidence persists even today that there have been nuclear wars on the Earth thousands of years ago. One of the most interesting documents of that sort is an epic about the war between Atlantis and India. And they describe atomic explosions very, very clearly. The name of the document, I believe, is the Mahabharata.
Yes.
And they describe these things very clearly. They talk about the effects of the radiation. They talk about the what happens to the animals and the people. They talk about the water boiling, you know, right in the rivers. And they talk about the fact that everything becomes poisoned. And the interesting thing is that some of the areas that they describe, I haven't been there. I wish I could go. But some of the areas they describe are just barren wastelands even today. And if those types of things happened, let's say, 10 or 12,000 years ago, which is approximately what they're suggesting, that's a heck of a long time for a good section of the Earth to be maintained as a wasteland. And who's to say what would happen, you know, if we're careless with those kind of forces today? You know, if it happened before, it can happen again, because unfortunately, people don't learn. They just
yes.
don't learn.
Well, I don't mean to take us off on another tangent, but there seems to be a pattern of blaming the people that use the technologies that are invented and provided by those that control the mineral resources of the world, be it coal or petroleum products or natural gas or whatever other technology they're using. We get blamed for using it. We are the ones penalized for it. But we're not given any other option. It sounds like a stacked deck from the beginning. In fact, it is a stacked deck. There's no doubt about it. But I take offense when all of humanity is risked with no information. And we can look at what the pharmaceutical companies are doing. It's the same damn thing. It's all being contained within vaccinations and pills. But it's the same thing, or what they put in our drinking water, or what they're spraying in our skies.
It isn't all contained either, Don. How do you like this latest concept of monkeying around with the genetic structure of the foods that we eat.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm referring to, yeah.
Well, that, you know, then once you eat it, you don't know what happens to it. You don't know what the long-term effects are. How do we know what's going to happen in 5-10 generations? You know, I think that it's a real sign of irresponsibility and arrogance to assume that they get away with any darn thing they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this corn that they've invented. I don't know too much about genetics at all. But from what I understand, they got spider corn now, which somehow takes some aspect of the spider genes and marries that or splices that in with the corn. And to our eyes, everything is the same, and to our taste buds. But to insects which attack the corn, they apparently detect the presence of spiders, and they don't ruin the crop. Well, it sounds very good in theory, but what happens to those spider genes when they get assimilated, you know, with the nutrients from the corn? Can anybody really tell you?
Well, you can look at a politician and probably figure out what that might what might be created. You know? It's just more insanity. Well, I wanted to bring that up as a, you know, you hit upon a couple of things. You said something about responsibility. And
yeah,
and mentioning these genetically modified foods, let's say like that created by Monsanto. You're describing something that is counter nature, counter creation. All of this is opposite of the creation. It's all about destruction. First of all, my understanding of metaphysics and how the universe is created, I couldn't get a scientist to sit down and listen. Maybe someone like yourself, yes. Someone like Dr. Mike Castle, yes, or Dr. H. U. Watt, or some other people that I know that are seriously into revealing the truth about these matters. Yes, they'll sit down and listen to what I have to say. And I know many other people that, from a metaphysical perspective, that have an intuitive understanding of what the creation is about. And I can tell you, it's not about murdering millions of people through warfare. Why does everything have to come out of a bang, out of an explosion where there's destruction? And just the concept itself, the Big Bang, to me, sounds destructive. They're making it sound like it's something that spurs on growth, spurs on life. Life doesn't have to explode or evolve out of an explosion to move upward, to increase in its consciousness. These are destructive methods. Everything that we talk about, anything that the government has created is destructive. Whether it's their financial system, their educational system, their interference with religion, and all the other aspects of what they control. It's all based on destruction of the species and controlling everything. For what purpose? Destroy it and then claim that you're in control of it? Where's their honor in that? Where is there any great accomplishment in destroying something and saying, I now control it? I control it to the extent, or we control it to the extent that we can destroy it at will. Wow, that's really a lofty thought. You know, that's consciousness. That's evolution. Where's Darwin and his little bell?
Well, you know, in response to that remark, I'll say this. You can take the simplest little creature anywhere on Earth that you feel like getting them from. I don't care what it is, an ant, a caterpillar, a beetle, grasshopper, or something even more minute, and sit it down on a nice stone slab and go ahead and squash it with a brick. Now, any idiot can do that. I'm telling you, anybody can do that. Even a two-year-old child can do that. Now, I'd like to see anybody reassemble it. And not only reassemble it, but have it hop away.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the thing that's so intriguing about all this. You know, it's easy to destroy something. It doesn't take any real brains. And
yes.
The reverse process, however, is another story altogether. And so what does that say about the, you know, the basic psyche of man? What does that say about our tendencies? You know, I used to think it was a flaw in the race, but I don't believe that anymore. I think it's a flaw in the people who manage things around here. Because left to its own devices, the race did very well for at least a million years, maybe longer. You know, now you have these yo-yos that come into the picture and decide that they're going to make things better. For themselves, of course. And so what do? They first fabricate an entire environment and an entire way of life, which is absolutely unnatural. And they raise entire crops of people, or herds, as they like to call them, in these artificial environments, which, of course, makes the person involved a product of that warped and unnatural environment, which means he isn't a natural human being anymore. So, you know, anybody listening who really sits down and thinks about this should realize they should be carrying a grudge already, because they're not allowed to be what God designed them to be. And that covers a whole range of activities from thinking and from pursuing your spiritual side, all the way down to the way you're forced to live and die. You know, and those are the hallmarks of the people that are in charge of this planet at the moment. So I don't really think it's any major accomplishment. You give me enough money, you give anybody enough money, you can figure out ways of killing more and more people. But I haven't yet seen anybody, you know, create even the simplest form of life and allow it to manifest in the world in a productive manner. And I don't think we'll ever see that.
Yeah. Jim, we have a caller. Before I take the call, I just want to add a comment. And this is going to allow us, I think, to segue into the second dimension of what we're going to discuss tonight, and you alluded to that, and we've talked about this on past shows. There's only one type of species that can treat its own the way we are being treated, and that is a species that pretends that they are us. Okay? And I'll stop there, and I'll take Rodney's call from South Carolina. Rodney, welcome to Evident Footprints. How are you? Rodney, are you with us? Well, I'm not hearing Rodney. If Rodney comes back, please let me know.
It's unusual to lose Rodney. He's usually pretty persistent about calling in.
Yeah. Maybe no one is there. Oh, okay. I got a sorry here. Maybe, is Rodney with us now? Is he coming on? Or? Oh, we have another caller. Okay. Rodney left. Rodney, if you're listening, call back. We'll try to take your call. No more callers now. Okay. All right. I guess that's the end of that conversation.
Well, that was pretty short.
Yeah, we talked about this on some other shows. Now, I'd like to draw an analogy here. Now I'm hearing that Rodney is back. Rodney, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay. Did we lose you, or was it just a bad connection?
Probably a bad connection.
Okay, you were with us all the time, huh?
Yeah, I was listening to you. I kept answering you.
Oh, we couldn't hear you. Sorry about that. Okay, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm sick and tired of the winter.
Yeah.
It's a whopping 26 degrees here. Isn't that fun?
We got hit with a bunch of snow, as a lot of people did, so just got a green beer.
Don, are you in Ohio or Idaho?
No, I'm in Ohio.
Just give me a general area.
Cleveland.
Okay, you're in Cuyahoga County?
Well, you said a general area. I gave you a general area.
Okay. Small world.
Mm-hmm. What's on your mind?
X-ray machines at the airports. Remember when I talked to you on that Tuesday when you guests didn't show up and I told you I'd have some information?
Mm-hmm.
I have a whole stack of it.
Okay.
This is something I would have to mail to you. Cancer danger and airport backscatter X-ray machines. Bear with me. This is ridiculous. Backscatter machines tear apart DNA. Several pages of that. Facing a full body scan, I'll take the pat down. Ionizing radiation could lead to mutation in cells. That's already been explained to me. And this information has already been put out by Dr. K, by the way.
Yeah, I heard the intensity of this radiation is like 100 times what you normally get. Is that true?
The information that I am holding in my hand will prove it. New scanners to reveal naked truth. And believe me, it shows everything. I know this. He went through one. Well, actually, he didn't personally walk through it. He was smart enough not to do it. And he was at an airport, and he told him, well, I don't want that stuff on me. You either pat me down or this is the way it is. And he and I discussed this at length.
Mm-hmm.
With Rick Adams. And I called in to lighten it up, and I said, Doc, when I meet you, I said, I don't want that suit coat here near me. And he knew what I was talking about. I'm well aware of what this stuff is. Related items. I mean, this is just ridiculous. I have family members that have to fly. I've told them, don't you come home and ever tell me you went through one of these. I said, because you'll never go to that airport again. I am so disgusted. Response to, oops, backscatter, X-ray machines, tear apart more DNA. And it goes, and here's 21 pages of details. I've read it. It's 10 times worse. The people that stand, you can call Doc K. He explained how people came up to him when he started talking to him. The people running this stuff. Their hair's falling out. Their teeth are falling out. They're having physical ailments. He went into detail on this on three different shows. I'm holding in my hand the evidence. That's what I told you I was going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have sent it to everybody except you. Because he told me, I don't say who I'm going to send it to. I've already sent it out to a whole bunch of different places that will help expose it.
Okay.
How do I get it to you?
Well, you can drop me an email, and or you can send it to the network. That's probably the easiest way.
Okay.
Send it to the network, and the information, just stay on hold, and Don will give you that information.
So in other words, get it to the network and make it attention to you.
Yes.
Okay, I'll hold on and get a sheet of paper and so I can send it down because he begged me and I told him, I said, send the stuff to me, I will get it out, and he said, shut your mouth, who you're sending it to.
Mm-hmm.
At this moment, I don't care if the Zionist bastards hear me. I'm going after you. I'm not afraid of you. I heard Drew last night. I agree with him. Go for it. I had 3 days with no chemtrails. That tells me something.
You're starting to you've been making a big stink about that, haven't you?
I make a stink on everybody I call, everybody I talk to, and my mouth is heard worldwide, including I've talked to people with Rick on down in Australia. I said, well, hey, don't come here for vacation because your ass is chemtrailed, and I can prove it. And if you want to know the proof, talk to your friend, what's his name? You know who I'm trying to tell you. I sent him the video. I can hear his voice. He's in California. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Is he a doctor?
No.
I don't know. It's not important to mention it on the air. Anyway.
They hit his website real bad.
Don't know who it is, but...
Yeah, you do, because you just had him on not too long ago, and I can't find my notes. But I sent him a 7 or almost an 8-minute video from December 29th. And I have the whole thing where I can send it out. Oh, I tell everybody, hey, I'm one of the persons that helped Dr. K for his final book, Nail Flight 93, when it landed in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, well, I heard that whole thing in real time, you know. They talked about it on the radio.
Yeah.
It was happening, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, I grew up, okay, you know where Fairview Park is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess who grew up there? So I know.
I know it wasn't Jim Murray. So.
Let's just say I watched the whole side of the mountain open up down in the Metropolitan Parks, and I know where the whole installation is. I told you underneath NASA. Also the tank plant. I've been in it. I've been in the wind tunnel. I did construction in those areas. Hey, let's blow the hoax. I suppose there's a whole bunch of people just going, I wish he'd shut up. No, you killed and assassinated my father. Payback's a bitch. And hey, Ted Turner, if you're listening, KMA.
Well, I doubt if he listens to this show. But, Rodney, do you have a question for Jim? Because we want to get back on topic here.
I just wanted to give you this information on what's going on. And, Jim, I hope I didn't screw up that, but I just want to get this out.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help, Jim?
Well, I'm aware of the fact that these new scanners have, you know, very intense X-ray outputs. But I honestly didn't know the magnitude of it. But, it stands to reason it has to be much more powerful than the normal scanners because of what it does, you know.
The magnitude is frightening.
It's totally unnecessary. It's draconian is what it is.
They are totally making you, they're killing you with it is what they're doing. In other words, it's another secret little way of, hey, they're nuking your ass. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Rodney, you send me that, and I'll take a look at it.
Will do. Hold on.
Hello, Rodney.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Send it to me. We're going to continue on with the show. We only have a few more minutes here. So.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's another aspect of what we go through, Jim. It's, it's food, pharmaceuticals, drinking water, air, education, doesn't matter. The economy, the financial system, insurance.
Yeah, healthcare. I mean, the list is almost endless when you stop and think of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, There was another issue that I wanted to go into, and that was you and I had discussed this on a previous show. There was an artifact that was found In fact, this artifact is on my website. I wrote an article about this event, and we've talked about it on past shows. Something that was discovered on Google Earth in Greenland a few years ago. And this object is lying on the ice and snow in Greenland, or what appears to be ice and snow when one's looking at Google Earth. And in respect to the masking techniques they use, you don't really know if you're looking at 100% cloud cover over an island or you're actually looking at snow. But they seem to leave the shoreline unscathed, and the rest of the island is totally covered in white, with the exception of somewhere near the middle. There's this object, a flat object that looks like a panel of a very large piece of construction material, about 11 miles wide and 50 miles long. You recall seeing that picture, right?
Yes, I do, and I must admit, it's pretty intriguing if it's really there. What the heck it is?
Yes, well, it would be strange for it just to be lying there, and it appears one would conclude that it probably fell out of the sky and was possibly in orbit in space and was brought down against the will of the individuals that created it, I would guess. And for some reason, they chose not to mask it on Google Earth. Maybe it was too difficult to do. I don't know. What I do find interesting, too, is that a recent version of that object is backdated on Google Earth. There are actually two different dates with the object there, and basically the same obscuring of the rest of the terrain. And there are some other folks that I know, researchers, that have been looking at the topography of Greenland and Iceland, and they've noticed tubes that are coming out of mountainous areas. There's an extinct volcano, or something that looks like the type of dome that's created by a volcano, and it's got these tubes protruding out that go underground. And these tubes are seen also in photos of Mars. And
yeah,
I
remember the tubes. I remember we discussed those.
Mm-hmm. And we know that those tubes aren't just there. They're not something that just happened to appear there. Of course, they're not in the mainstream pictures that we're shown via NASA and the media. These are pictures that snuck through the cracks and reveal a lot of anomalies that are present that are never discussed and look totally different than the orange reddish tinting of intentional masking of photographs to hide things that are on the surface of Mars, including the people that are up there. So again, we're into all of these secrets. We have all this secrecy that we're constantly butting heads with. Somehow that for us to know these things would disrupt life. Life is bad enough. It's disrupted enough not knowing it. But I'll tell you, knowing it and knowing what it's about, it doesn't disrupt anything. It leads you to the truth. It makes everything, it makes the lies very, very meaningless. The corrupted history that we've been given. Seems like I could pull a name out of a hat and do a genealogy and likely prove that most of the people that have worked for our government aren't even from this country. I could bet my life on that. I've hit 5 out of 5 on my first 5 tries. Those are pretty overwhelming odds. And I suspect that I could do the same thing another five times and get 5 out of 5. So what I'm getting at is that we're not being told even 10% of the truth about what's happening on this planet, let alone what's happening outside of this planet. And, you know, it's getting really ridiculous how they expect everyone to be dumb. Dumbed down. They're pretty cocksure of themselves to think that we cannot determine what is really going on, or that somehow knowing what's going on, you have to pay a penalty for that. That somehow paying that penalty is going to stop others from knowing it. It's been going on throughout history, hasn't it? Discoveries that debunk the primitive science that we're given to run the society, because that's the only way they can run it is by keeping even the technology dumbed down, just giving us the fringe of whatever it is that's been developed, because everything else is used to create war and to destroy life. There we get a call from someone is talking about another dangerous invention that we have at airports, as if airports aren't dangerous enough, under a false pretense that somehow the very people that support the business of the airlines by traveling and paying outrageous prices for the tickets and for the outrageous salaries that people have no business even being there get paid, on the basis of all the illusions and the lies that they spew. It's just insane what this world has come to, that these are not human beings running the show. There is no doubt about that. And this is coming out on a number of other shows, on a number of different levels. People are putting the pieces of the puzzle together, and it keeps leading to the same group. The same puppet masters, if you want to call them that. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm inclined to agree, but I also think that a lot of these things are what you might call double purpose or multiple purpose technologies. Sure, they give you the pretext that, terrorists are everywhere and it's important to take a complete body scan because somebody might be carrying a weapon or something that's harmful, and we want our pedestrians to be safe. But also, you start to figure just from what Randy said, if the operators of this equipment are losing their hair and their teeth, and the next thing they'll be doing will be coming down with various forms of cancers and leukemia and God only knows what else, because that's typical of what happens with constant exposure to powerful radiations. I mean, I just went to the Hiroshima Museum when I was in Japan, and they've got actual photographs of what happens to people as a result of these nuclear blasts, and it's not all from the heat. A lot of it's from the X-rays and from the other forms of radiation, gamma radiation, and everything else that comes out of those blasts. So if they're deliberately exposing you to this stuff, it can't be in ignorance. There's too much knowledge already amassed on what this technology can do. So what would be the secondary purpose? Feed the individuals to the cancer mechanism. You know, everybody that comes down with cancer, there was an actual publication on that subject from the U.S. government printing office, and it was about 6 or 8 years ago I read it, and it said that every cancer patient from the time of admission to the time of death, and they didn't say till the time of release, they said till the time of death, will net, about $250,000 to $300,000, in revenue for the attending hospital. So, you know, why not pump those numbers up a little? You know, they can do that very easily by scanning you every time you go through an airport.
Yeah, I thought the metal detectors took care of that. Then I thought the wands took care of that. You remember? Then I thought the strip searches took care of that against their will. You know, there was a woman I recall a few years ago, maybe just a couple of years ago, at the Phoenix airport, was strip searched and tased and died there. Of course, they had to make up a story about it.
Yeah, what was she smuggling?
Well, you know, this was just somebody that didn't want to bow down to the tyranny, that's all.
Well, I understand, but I mean, they must have come up with some inventive excuse for having killed the poor woman.
Oh, yeah, they did. They lied about the whole thing. I don't remember all the details, but, you know, she was basically assaulted by a whole gang of alleged security people. You know, it's ridiculous what's going on. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's just one lie after another.
Well, when is the public going to smarten up and start putting their foot down? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, that's why we do these shows. You repeat the message. You give them the different dimensions of what's going on. We're not making this stuff up. It's just, you know, I'm reading the article about the collider. We're both in agreement that they really don't know what they're doing. They're trying to play God. We have enough problems. Don't you think that money could be spent on solving some of the problems that we know can be solved? But it's got to go into the pockets, certain pockets. You see, they pre-designate who's going to get the money. And they invent a reason to spend the money. Now, let's presume that experiment is a success, and they understand how God created life. What's the next step at that point? Are they going to turn this into a weapon now and use it against God himself?
Well, you know, that kind of nonsense has been tried in the past. Doesn't work very well. But nothing would surprise me. Nothing would surprise me because you have to understand the mentality that you're dealing with. You know, that much arrogance and that much ego backed up with a total lust for power and control and you know, anal retention beyond belief in their character structure is capable of anything.
Yeah. Well, we have people that come forth and report being abducted and being tortured and going through all kinds of sadistic experiments their whole lives, their whole family. This is generation after generation. This has been going on. And it doesn't sound so far-fetched when you compare it to what they do when they all get together and spend billions of dollars. You know, if I thought that this was going to lead man to a higher consciousness, I would applaud it. I would be out on the front lines holding up signs telling everybody to come see it. You know, but they don't want people to know what's going on. They really don't. And I'm certain that this is something that they're making us pay for so that they can go elsewhere and destroy some other planet somewhere else. After they've destroyed this one. That's all they know. They know nothing about honoring the creation, honoring life. They know nothing about love other than their lust for money and power. And that's the most perverted kind of love there is.
I certainly agree with you there.
Well, we're about out of time, but certainly we'll get some feedback on this topic, I'm sure. And maybe we can keep our eyes and ears open for what this experiment is doing. And come forth next week, we can talk a bit more about some of these anomalies. We have a whole team of people who were basically doing some exploring. And, you know, we're reviving the American explorer spirit here. And we're going to look into where some of these objects come from. I've got a few things I want to share on this Greenland thing, but we'll have to do that the next show.
All right, Don. I'll be happy to participate. No problem.
All right. Any closing comment that you would like to make before we say goodnight, Jim?
Well, one thing that I thought of while you were making your closing remarks, you know, they have built colliders before. They haven't been super colliders. You know, the energy yield was much less. But it would be interesting to research that and learn a little bit more about the outcome of some of those experiments, and then maybe that will give us a better plateau from which to predict what might or might not happen with the big one.
Yeah, wouldn't it be interesting to find out that this object in Greenland may have been part of a collider experiment out in space that maybe went awry or met some interference from a higher intelligence, let's say. Somebody that said, wait a minute, you know, not here.
Well, yeah, that's possible. More likely, it sounds like a big mothership of some sort. And as you pointed out, maybe it was shot down. By the way, I meant to ask you, what is the color of the object?
The one in Greenland, according to what we see in Google Earth, it's sort of an orangish with a little bit of yellow tinge to it. And, of course, it's doctored. There's a debunking article on the internet that explains this as a result of the compilation of various satellite photos being adjoined together.
And it creates an anomaly 11 miles wide and 50 miles long.
Yes, exactly. That was my response. When they do that masking technique, and it's masking that does that, they could shoot all this with one satellite. You know, don't be fooled by it. When they're creating these composite photos that we end up seeing, you'll see a square box in a place. You'll see green, and you might see trees or grass, and some mountains, both with brown and green tones to them. Then you see this object, and it's got a color bar that they put across the right edge of this thing, which looks like a big construction seam, like a place where you might attach bolts to it to attach it to another piece, a big piece like that. And this article says that this phenomenon is caused by compiling these pictures. Well, I don't see this object appearing everywhere else where I see this masking technique being used. You know, it's only in Greenland. I don't see this over the Mojave Desert. I don't see it in Alaska. You just don't see that. But you see these tubes that we're talking about in a lot of places. They are visible in Argentina also. Not just in Iceland and Greenland. But these tubes are likely used for high-speed trains. That's one thing. These are transportation routes. And there are a lot of them. So the question is, who's using them? Who would be using a panel that looks like it's part of a larger construction 11 miles by 50 miles in length? Who would be using something that size? What would be the purpose? Like you said, and I've said on past shows, it appears to be a mothership that was being constructed. And they ran into some interference, ran into some problems, probably because of the intent behind it. You know, it's worth talking about. It's there. Something that we see, why can't we talk about it?
Well, it should be talked about. I mean, I'm fascinated by what it could be myself. I remember the picture from a year or more ago when we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, I had forgotten about it, but it's interesting that it's cropped up again. And, you know, something that big is an amazing thing to begin with, regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
And to find it sitting up there on the ice cap of Greenland is a very strange thing in its own right. You know, like you say, where the heck did it come from? Now, when you first told me about it, to be honest with you, I was of the impression that it's something that was already there and that the receding ice had exposed it. You know, and to me, that was really interesting, you know, to assume that, hey, something was actually that big, was actually sitting on the surface of Greenland, got covered over by the ice, you know, when the earth was healthy. And now that the global warming has taken over, it's beginning to expose this huge thing. That was my original impression. I didn't even consider the thing having come down from space, to be honest with you, although that's certainly another possibility. Is there any scarring or any scoring on it that would indicate, you know, frictional burning as it came through the atmosphere?
Oh, it there appears to be several scorch marks on it, if it hasn't been doctored, you know, by the people that take the shots, like everything else. But there's no doubt that this is an anomaly in the midst of a place where it shouldn't be. And I'll repeat myself to try to explain it away as a distortion that occurs when you take these composite satellite photos and try to piece them together like pieces of a puzzle. And that occurred because of this distortion. You should see them all over the planet because they're doing this technique. They're hiding lots of things. That's the point I'm making. They're hiding many, many things. Why?
They also do that composite quilt work, photographic quilt work, when they scan a planet with a probe. The whole map of the surface of Mars was made that way. So, I mean, we should see hundreds and hundreds of these giant cylinders that are, 11 miles wide and 50 miles long. The place should be littered with them.
Mm-hmm. That's the point I'm making. So, oh, my goodness. Well, we'll be talking about that some more, maybe next week. We'll see what comes out.
Very good, Don.
Okay. I appreciate your input. Tonight, as usual, you're always on the money, and we definitely agree on many, many points. I want to thank Rodney for his call, too. Look forward to seeing what he's discovered. And we'll talk next week, Jim. In the meantime, I want to wish you a great weekend and say goodnight to the listening audience.
Well, thank you, Don. I'll say goodnight to you also.
Okay.
Have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. You take care. That's it, folks. That's the end of another show. Another week here on Evident Footprints. Like to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting the show. Don Newsom on the sound tonight. And also like to thank Don Newsom and Doug Newsom at BBS Radio for making Evident Footprints possible. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. Have a great weekend. Come back next Monday night for Dr. H. Uat. In the meantime, have a good night.